Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Neutron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the super-duper Jonathan Strickland.
Up, up, and away in my beautiful balloon museum.
Balloon museum?
Yeah.
We're talking about balloon museums? I missed the note.
It's right across the street from me, Ariel. Like, there's a balloon museum across the street from. I went to it this week. I'll talk about it in a second.
I thought, so you think you could dance was across the street from you.
That's also, listen, there's a lot that's across the street from me. It's a big complex, and one of the things that's in there is a balloon museum.
I need to visit you more often, apparently.
True.
Maybe we'll do. We have talked about like once a month doing an in-person video recording of this podcast. So if we can figure out those logistics, then that's likely to happen.
Yeah. So welcome everyone to our podcast. We're going to start, as we always do, by talking about stuff, what we have seen and done since the last time we recorded. And if you want, I'll just go ahead and go first since I talked about the balloon museum. So yeah, there's a balloon museum exhibit. It's in the Pullman train yard, which is very close to where I live, like in walking distance. And I went there this past week, partly as a celebration for my wife's birthday, partly just to see what it was all about. And it kind of spans the gap between a legitimate exhibition and one of those Instagram pop-up museum experiences. You know what I'm talking about, right, Ariel? Like the
Candytopia or the slime, the really gross slime places.
Yeah, I want to say there was like a donut inspired one as well, besides the Candytopia one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those things where you realize that it's only made for you to go in and take selfies where there's all this stuff around you and that there's nothing else to the experience. This felt like it had a little more substance than that, a little more, not a lot, but it involved a lot of artists who had created essentially like inflatable sculptures of different types. Like some of them were very abstract. Some of them were less so. My favorite room was a corridor where they had smoke-filled soap bubbles flying through the air while they projected like laser lights as well. So it had this really cool lighting effect, and the little smoke bubbles were neat when they would pop, right? Like that was really cool. Yeah. They also had a huge swimming pool-like area filled with thousands and thousands of black balls. So it was a ball pit essentially, and people were given the opportunity to free fall, not jump into, but free fall into the balls and then stay inside the giant pool filled with balls to watch like a little video component to this piece. I did not get into the pool, but both of the people I went with did.
Did they survive the ball pit?
They did. Both of them lived, although a friend of the show, Shay, bruised her patootie.
Oh, yeah.
Like when she did her fall back, like her butt hit the base of the pool because it's not that deep. Like there's no deep end. Mm-hmm. It was large, but not deep because you need to be able to get up and walk around to get yourself to the edge and pull yourself back out again. But yeah, she said that when she fell backward, she hit her butt a little too hard. As I said, I did not get in, and so I did not experience this myself. But yeah, it was cute. Like, I don't know if it's worth almost $40 a ticket. Cute. But
well, I mean, ball pits are not balloons. I'm sorry. Like, I will call a Pop-Tart a sandwich, but a ball pit is not a balloon.
Yeah. It's first of all, Pop-Tart a sandwich. Well, that's going to come back later in this episode. I agree. Bubbles aren't balloons either, technically, but it was still my favorite room.
But at least they float.
Yeah, it was neat. I thought it was a neat experience. Like, I didn't dislike it. I definitely felt the price, as I said on a social media post, was overinflated, to use a balloon joke. But still, kind of a cool experience. Other than that, I watched the most recent episode of Dick Turpin, which is the second to last. It's the penultimate episode for this season, and ended in a bit of a cliffhanger, which made me wish that I had just waited until the end of this week to watch both parts back to back. So now, like, what I have to look forward to tonight is the conclusion of that story. I also started playing Stardew Valley for like the 20th time because update 1.6 released this week. And so, like, it's crazy to me that the creator of that game continues to push out updates to it years after its initial release and adding incredible value. Like, he did some stuff that was just like little quality of life improvements in the game, but he also added like legit, like substantial content in there. And so I'm really enjoying it. It actually has pulled me away from Like a Dragon. I was about to go into the final chapter of Like a Dragon, the most recent game in what used to be called the Yakuza series. I was in chapter 13 and there are 14 chapters, and I put it down to switch to Stardew Valley. And I think that's it for me. So what about you, Ariel? I've been chatting for way too long.
So I've been adding stuff while you were chatting. I've also been listening. I've never played Stardew Valley or the Yakuza series, although the latter has interested me.
You got to play Stardew Valley. Trust me. Buy the game. Play Stardew Valley. It's one of those games where it's like Civilization, where it has that one more turn kind of aspect to it. You'll complete a day and your progress saves when you get to the end of the day. And then the next day starts. And the temptation to just go into that next day and not walk away is incredible.
Maybe I will do it when I've got someone to hold me accountable, because I don't need a game like that in my life. I have so much to do on a daily basis.
I understand.
And I'm trying to get my, I will play it at some point. I will. That, and as soon as I get, I figure out what machine I want to play Baldur's Gate 3 on and get that machine, I'll play that too. I did last weekend, after we recorded, watch it wasn't last week. It was 2 weekends ago, but I didn't talk about it. I watched a friend play Unicorn Overlord, which is an interesting turn-based game where you set up all of your characters to do their stuff beforehand, and then you just watch them fight. You don't make decisions in the middle of the battle. Mm-hmm. But the weirdest thing about it was a lot of like the character and costume design was very incongruous to me. There was a noble who was dressed like an exotic dancer. Not that that's a bad way to dress. Like, it would be a fun cosplay to do, but it kind of, a lot of the characters' design didn't necessarily match with the kind of character that they were.
Sure.
And it was a little bit weird and funny, but it was interesting. But this week, I saw Ghostbusters: The Frozen Empire.
Right. Also known as Ghostbusters: Let It Go.
You know, my husband said that he wasn't able to turn off his brain enough to enjoy it. And there are definitely things about it that could have been better done is the wrong word. I felt a couple of pieces were not necessary, or some of the plot was a little convoluted, but I enjoyed the journey. Interestingly enough, I enjoyed the journey to get to the battle more than I enjoyed the battle. By the time I got to the battle, I was a little bit like, is this movie over, or is this like a midway through the movie battle? But up to that point, I enjoyed it. The family dynamics were amazing. That was a lot of fun to watch. The special people that they brought into the Ghostbusters organization were a lot of fun. I felt very much like they had pulled some inspiration from Dropout or Dimension 20's Unsleeping City. it was fun. I enjoyed it. The movie, I thought, was going to someplace nostalgic that it didn't end up going to. And afterwards, my husband and I were talking about it, and he also thought the movie was going to go to this specific place. It's a new enough movie. I'm worried about giving spoilers. But it had to do with, past specters and things like that.
So like a Vigo thing? You thought Vigo was going to show up?
No, I didn't.
Oh, so we're talking like maybe like a Gozer or something in that case. Okay, got it.
Not Vigo, not Gozer, more inconsequential ghosts. But I did like a lot about the movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. The jokes landed. The Easter eggs were more well incorporated. So Afterlife was very much a love letter to the original Ghostbusters movie. I've said this quite a few times on this podcast. But all of like the Easter eggs and all of the callbacks were very apparent. And they were much more well integrated into this movie, where it felt like a story and not just a bunch of callbacks. So that was great.
Yeah.
And then the actor, there was an actor in the mid-credit end scene who is a regional actor, and he's a really great guy. And I was super excited to get to see him be in it, because he had posted on social about his journey to get the role. And it was a really interesting conversation, because apparently, like, when he got the audition, he had no idea what it was for. It was dummy sides, like they do with really big movies, but they needed a body scan. And this was right after like the strike. And he's like, I don't know if I can do this. I really need more information. And just his journey to make the decision to audition for it anyhow, and how well it turned out. So I was glad to see it work out for him. But that was good. Now I'm talking way too long. In anticipation of watching the new Roadhouse movie, my husband watched the original Roadhouse movie, and I watched the second half of the original Roadhouse movie.
Now, well, the question is, in that second, I don't remember where it falls in the film. Did you get to hear the immortal line, pain don't hurt?
I don't know.
That probably was in the first half then.
This last week, I was also super, super busy, so I was exhausted by the time I got to Roadhouse. But I will tell you, the movie, its wear shows, right? It doesn't hold up incredibly well, but it's immensely more fun if you imagine that every other attractive guy in the film who plays like a villain or a adversary is someone else who auditioned for Patrick Swayze's role and didn't get it.
Hmm.
That just makes it a lot more fun.
Like, it's real insider baseball. The longer you're an actor, the more I'm going to have to deal with these kinds of things.
No, I was like, he kind of looks like Patrick Swayze. I wonder if he auditioned for the main role and didn't get it, and now he's the villain. And so it's kind of like a real life fake adversarial thing. Just funny, funny brainness.
Sure.
I've watched the first couple of episodes of X-Men 97. Which is the cartoon that's the continuation of the old X-Men cartoon. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying it. I had to be reminded of a couple of things from the original cartoon, because it's been a long time and I didn't go back and watch it, but I'm really enjoying the story so far. It's given me like very much the feel of like the Wolverine podcasts that came out a few years ago and all that. So it's great.
Cool.
And then Three Body Problem is out and I want to watch it, but my husband just got the book for Christmas and doesn't want to watch the show till he's read the book. So I guess I'm holding off on that one.
I mean, you could always try and watch it yourself and just potentially deal with that being a strain on your relationship, because that typically is what happens in my household, is that one of the two of us will end up jumping ahead and the other one's like, you betrayed me.
I do that with like pitch meetings and ordinary sausage videos and how it should have ended and things like that. TV shows, we tend to wait for each other. I did watch all of Last of Us without Tony because he wants to play the video game first and he's not ready to play the video game yet. But I was like, hey, I'm going to do this. I hope you don't mind. He's like, no, it's fine. So he'll probably read Three Body Problem well before he plays Last of Us, though. So,
well, but before we go any further, it's time for us to segue into our beloved, famed segment, 30 Seconds or Less, where we guarantee, not a guarantee, that we will cover the following stories each in 30 seconds or less.
And this first one doesn't really belong in a 30 seconds or less. It's that Louis Gossett Jr. passed away it was announced the day of our recording this. He's 87 years old. He's a very prolific actor. He won like an Oscar and an Emmy for being in Roots, the original. He won an Academy Award, I think, for being in An Officer and a Gentleman. But he's done a bunch of geeky stuff, too. He was in the new Watchmen TV show for HBO. He was in the 90s Punisher. He had a guest role on Psych and Stargate. And he was in Jaws 3D and Enemy Mine and a voice in the Batman cartoon. So he did a lot of cool stuff and apparently did a lot of like good things, too. So go out and watch something that he's done in geeky remembrance.
Yes. Yeah. There's tons of options. He was a prolific actor. So, yes. Okay. Moving on. In the Robots Took Our Jobs category, actor Sarah Poizer says that the BBC agreed to replace her with an AI voiceover for an unnamed project. She posted a screenshot of a message that said, quote, "Sorry for the delay. We have had the approval from BBC to use the AI-generated voice, so we won't need Sarah anymore," end quote. So you might remember this issue was a cornerstone during the SAG-AFTRA strikes here in the United States. And I have to say, not a great move, BBC.
Yeah, they're realizing that. It makes me mad. And also, not everything was settled for voice actors. There's still a lot of reasonable to do there.
Yes.
So are you old enough to remember Sister Act or Sister Act 2? Well, apparently for like 10 years now, they've been talking about making a Sister Act 3, maybe a direct-to-streaming movie for Disney Plus. They started talking about it in 2015. In 2020, they said maybe a Disney Plus streaming thing. Apparently, according to Whoopi Goldberg, it's still in the works. I liked Sister Act. If they can give me a good story, I wouldn't mind a third one. I don't know how much of an audience it will have because I don't know how many like newer generations have watched it.
I mean, it depends. Did you know that there's a Broadway musical Sister Act?
Yes, but it's so very different and they don't use any of the pop tunes. Like to me, sorry, we're going off 30 seconds here. To me, Sister Act is like the precursor to all of like the soundtracks to things like The Suicide Squad or Guardians of the Galaxy or whatnot. Like,
gotcha.
They did jukebox musical right.
Yeah, yeah.
But the musical is not that.
The reason why I ask is like there's some people who might, their familiarity with Sister Act might only be the Broadway musical, which is weird to think about. But anyway, okay. Back in 2021, Netflix treated viewers with a trilogy of Fear Street films adapted from R.L. Stein novels. Those three stories were interconnected, and now we're getting a fourth film titled Fear Street Prom Queen. It's set in 1988 and will feature a cast including India Fowler, Susanna Sun, Fina Straza, David Iacono, and Ella Rubin. And I don't recognize any of those names, but I am old.
Yes, I haven't watched Fear Street. Speaking of old, are you old enough to remember American Gladiators? So apparently they're American Gladiators, which was kind of like, hey, fight people with foam weapons, like cool LARPing on TV mixed with Ninja Warrior, had spun off to the UK, and that has had a reboot, Gladiators, in the BBC, was so big that its first episode, which recently launched, I think, is the largest launch that the BBC has had in nearly a decade. They've had 10 million viewers after 28 days, so they're getting a second season. So, yay!
Yeah,
hitting people with foam poles on balance beams.
That's also where the joke in Dodgeball came from, where he's introducing his team that includes a guy named Laser and a guy named Blazer. Like, it was clearly like a joking reference to American Gladiators. Well,
I watched the goodness out of American Gladiators when I was little.
So I enjoyed it as a kid, too. I thought it was great. It was a great, like, I always wanted to be the guy firing tennis balls out of the tennis ball cannon while people are running behind various like cover and trying to fire back. I was like, this is awesome. Well, remember that Hollywood auction that we mentioned a couple of episodes ago? One item that commanded a massive $718,750 bid was the door that killed Leonardo DiCaprio. Or it saved Kate Winslet. It really just depends upon your point of view. But I'm talking about the prop door used at the end of Titanic. According to Hollywood Reporter, it's made out of balsa wood, which even by Home Depot standards is overpricing.
Sorry.
You can tell when Ariel gets distracted and starts typing things when there's a long delay.
No, I mean, it was funny. I liked it. I liked the Home Depot dig. I wonder if it's still wet, like Colin Firth's shirt was. I think it's a different question. anyhow, apparently, did you ever want to own a cinema line, a movie house franchise? Because apparently Alamo Drafthouse Cinema is up for sale. We don't know the price, but apparently their numbers have been doing better than the overall domestic box office numbers. So if you've got millions or billions of dollars to spend and you want to own a movie theater line, now's your chance.
Yeah. Alamo Drafthouse has a reputation for being like a filmgoers theater chain where they have very strict rules in place. And if you break those rules, you will be told to leave. And that includes things like texting during a film, that kind of stuff. And but the chain also has not been without its own list of controversies, which we're not going to get into here. I'm sure that
they're selling.
Yeah, I'm sure that folks in Austin, Texas are a bit nervous about who might take over that cinema because it has a long and beloved history in that town. But speaking of beloved, I love Florence Pugh. That could be the end of this 30 seconds or less piece right here. But one of the reasons I love her is for the amount of F's she gives when it comes to showing folks backstage looks at her work, which is zero. She gives zero of them. So she recently posted a short video on Instagram showing a quick glimpse of goings-on during Thunderbolts filming, which is happening right here in Atlanta. Florence, if you are listening, let's go grab tea. I know just the place.
Aw, that's sweet. Don't know which... I have a guess which soundstage they're actually filming at, but... Did you know that there's also a bunch of sound stages up in Doraville now?
I did not. I only know the ones that are south of the city.
You can see them from 285.
That's the perimeter, y'all. That's the perimeter that goes around the city for those of you not in the Atlanta area.
Yes. And if you're inside the perimeter, you're ITP. Haha.
That's me.
You're cool. And if you're outside the perimeter, apparently
you're trash.
You're
that's Ariel.
And not cool. But also, I live in Roswell, which is right on the border of Sandy Springs, which to me is still Metro Atlanta. So I'm insert raspberry here. I'm not going to actually spit into my microphone. That's gross. last 30 seconds or less story.
not last for
me.
You.
Oh, shoot. Last story for me. This is what happens when I'm looking at my tabs and not the lineup. Witcher 4 is in the works, and there are over 400 people working on it, CDPR confirms. That is two-thirds of their studio. It sounds like eventually they're going to ramp up to that being their main focus. They've made a bunch of promises and also said they're not going to have a bunch of releases. So it's weird what their production schedule is, but hopefully with that many people, Witcher 4 will be a good output. I've never played a Witcher game. I've only watched the TV shows.
I started Witcher 3. And it was a game that was so deep and so broad that I fell off of it relatively early on just because I felt like, kind of like in a game like Skyrim or the Fallout series where there's so much stuff you can do that it distracts you from the stuff you're supposed to do. And also it didn't help that I felt like I was really bad at combat in the game. So it was a perfect convergence of things that made me kind of fall off of it. That being said, the scope of those games, it's so huge that I'm not surprised that there are 400 people working on it. Okay.
Yeah.
We have the confirmation that the final season of the long-running series Red vs. Blue will publish this year starting in May. Co-creator Bernie Burns returned to write the series, and co-creator Matt Hullum directed it. We got a trailer that showed the stakes are really high for the former residents of Blood Gulch Canyon, and yet the series still sports the goofy humor it's known for. Glad to see that the series will get a fitting end, because that wasn't a guarantee since Rooster Teeth is getting shut down.
Yes, and I put in my notes, Red vs. Blue is taking the Farscape finale approach, which is by ending with a movie, but or a film. But they aren't having to wait years after being surprise canceled, thinking they're having a next season. So that's good.
Yeah. So that was a long version of 30 seconds or less where we didn't live up to our guarantee. Sorry, you can get a refund for this episode at the end, which will be $0.
Yes. So now on to our regular stories, which might be more 30 seconds or less than our 30 seconds or less. I don't actually think so. We were kind of worried this was going to be a short episode earlier this week because news was a little bit slow. But it doesn't actually look that way.
No, so. Yeah. Thursday morning, it looked like we had a very light episode, but then everything kind of started coming out late yesterday and then today as we record this. One thing that was on our lineup from the beginning, because Ariel put it there, is the trailer that we got for the Penguin series, or Pinguin series if you're Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, I thought you were telling me I typoed.
No, that's how there was this whole joke about how Benedict Cumberbatch narrated a documentary about animals, including penguins, but could not say the word penguin.
Yes. I mean, if you say it enough, it stops being a real word.
That's true.
I fully acknowledge that. Penguin is one of those. So this trailer, we know, I've said it recently, I didn't care for the Robert Pattinson, the Batman movie. I felt like it was too long. I did feel like several people gave very good performances, and despite the fact that I think it's ridiculous to cast Colin Farrell in something where he has to be in a fat suit and completely unrecognizable, I think his Penguin performance was really good.
For what it was, yeah. I mean, it's clearly not, it's not the classic depiction of the Penguin, but then again, neither was Danny DeVito's Penguin in the Tim Burton film, right? Like, that was a big departure from the classic version of the character. And the Riddler was a huge departure from the classic depiction of the Riddler.
Yeah.
The one criticism I saw from, I want to say it was one of our mutual friends, but I can't remember who it was now, so I'm not going to, I don't want to misattribute. But the complaint I saw was that the Penguin in this series came across as looking like no more than your typical gangster slash crime lord type character. And I'm inclined to agree.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it gave me Sopranos vibes.
I mean, not that it was done poorly, but like you watch it and you're like, I don't even necessarily understand why he gets the name Penguin at all. It doesn't feel like that's an appropriate name for this character. He definitely feels more like a ruthless gangster type and less of the more flamboyant Batman villain. Keeping in mind, of course, that all the Batman characters have gone through massive tonal shifts throughout the history. Cause I mean, that comic book's been around for almost a century, right? So clearly things change depending on what era you're reading, but still, yeah, it felt a little weird to me.
It felt weird to me too. But also, seriously, it's Colin Farrell, right?
Yeah.
Completely unrecognizable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yes. I stared. I'm like, there's nothing about this person that looks like the person that's playing him.
So unrecognizable that I would have accidentally called him Colin Firth. But that's also because my brain does that thing where if there are two names that are similar, I will mix them up.
They're both from across the pond, and they're both named Colin.
And they both have a last name that starts with an F, you know?
And I'm sure they've both worn wet shirts on a film at some point.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely moments where Penguin looks like he's been doused. So, yes. Yeah. So it doesn't look bad. It just doesn't make me think of the Penguin. So I think it's still probably going to be a compelling show to watch. I'm just not sure that at the end of it, I'm going to think, well, yeah, that makes a good entry into this Batman mythology, or if I'm going to watch it and just say, that was a good gangster series, I wish that they hadn't bothered to make it connected to Batman.
Yeah, yeah. So in my household, we watched Gotham for a little bit and fell off quickly because it just was tonally all over the place. It was hard. We never tried Pennyworth. I think I watched like one episode of it, or most of an episode, and it just didn't grab me. And maybe that's because I wasn't starting from the beginning, or maybe it's because I didn't watch Gotham. This feels like it's probably separate from that because it's based off of the Batman, which was separate from that. So maybe, I mean, if it's gangster related, we'll probably watch it.
Yeah,
I hope it's good.
Yeah, me too. I mean, out of no other reason that I'm curious to see what other, if any, Batman references make their way into the show. Or if they don't, then that really does raise the question of why did this need to be a Batman spinoff? Something else that you put into our lineup early on, before we were thinking that we weren't going to have much to talk about, was a trailer for an animated anthology of loose takes on Grimm fairy tales called Grimm Variations.
Yes, it's anime. I don't know if there's going to be a dubbed version. The trailer is subtitled. I don't know. Fairy tales are one of the places where I can get like a little bit dark in my subject matter material, and it looks really fun to me. It's basically where like all of the fairy tale heroes that you hear about are actually villains, which is not a very unoriginal story. There are lots of stories where like Hansel and Gretel were actually the bad guys. But it looks interesting to me.
Six different classic stories, including the Bremen musicians. Like that was an interesting one to be added in there. Some of them I felt were like very much more loosely based on the on the original fairy tale. Yeah. Like you watch it and you're like, okay, this is like leagues away from the original fairy tale, to the point where maybe it's just a little bit of aesthetic that made its way into the finished product. But that doesn't mean that the episodes themselves won't be entertaining or interesting. The art style is very nice. So I don't know that I'm going to watch this if I'm going to be completely honest, but I do admire the artistry that went into it.
I will probably watch it. I'll let you know how it is. I've been kind of craving some more dark fairy tale after Never After from Dimension 20. So,
Well, something that doesn't look dark, but does look zany and like it's got a much larger budget than it normally does is the trailer we got for the next season of Doctor Who.
Yeah. It's such a different feel from like the past couple of seasons. It's really intriguing, is what I'll say.
Yeah, I mean the money that Disney Plus has spent on this series is on display on that screen though, because when you look at it, you're like, this looks like the production value has jumped up by a large factor compared to previous seasons of the show.
Yes, I. It's interesting because we're going back to Russell T. Davies as the showrunner. Obviously, the holiday special that was solely Trudy Gatwa. I had mixed opinions on because it felt the first half of it felt a little extra goofy, and then the second of the half of it added like a level of ominousness, that's not the right word, but basically like there were stakes added that made me feel like the situation wasn't dire, but it had stakes. I'm talking around in circles here. So I felt like the episode, while it was fun and I liked both halves, I felt it was a little incongruous. And this series has both of those aspects, but or this trailer has both these aspects, but maybe makes me feel like they're blended a little bit better together.
Mm. Yeah, I was left wondering if the added production value is going to affect the charm of the series, because arguably some of the charm, especially for the old episodes of Doctor Who, is how janky things were, but they were still telling these good stories. Like, the stories were things that people, that really affected people. I mean, you have lifelong Doctor Who fans out there, but you watch like those early Doctor Who episodes and you're like, man, it looks like they might have had a budget of about $7.37 per episode. And some episodes they had to save and scrimp a bit and go on coupon day or something. So this is a huge change from that. I also say it's fun to see a doctor who's got a kind of sassy attitude in this trailer, because that definitely comes across. There's a lot of groove and style in this trailer as well.
Yeah, yeah. And brilliant choice, like brilliant music choice.
Yeah.
Time won't change me.
Changes from good old David Bowie.
Yeah, brilliant music choice for the trailer. It is interesting because I read an article a couple of months ago, a month or two ago, saying that the Ruby, the companion, is not actually sticking around. She might be changing out mid-season. Spoilers, I'm sorry, if you haven't read that article. So I wonder if they're alluding to that in the trailer.
Yeah, there's one point where he says that he promises he'll keep her safe. And I'm like, all right, I know you'd recently had your transformation, Doctor. I know that it hasn't been that long, and therefore your memories are probably still scrambled. But you don't have a great track record of your companions being quote-unquote safe. At best, they're not killed.
I mean, but he also has a new attitude, which is everything is possible, which is not traditional classic Who. Usually it's like everybody dies except for this one time kind of an attitude.
Yeah, one thing that I think is a mainstay of the series, and we saw that it in fact will be heavily represented this year, is the tendency to run away. Like, yes. running away from stuff, which is a thing in like every incarnation of Doctor Who and continues to be a thing in this one. So good to see that some traditions are maintained.
Yeah, you gotta get your, like, everybody who gets done being on Doctor Who can then run marathons, no problem.
Hey, Ariel, remember when we were in a Doctor Who parody and we had to run and there was no space to run in?
Yes, that was very awkward. And also the floor was very rickety because it was on a temporary stage.
Yeah, that was a scary time. And not just because Ariel had to stage kiss me like 3 times in that show.
I mean, we've had to stage kiss in so many shows. It's whatever. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's old hat now.
It's old hat now. It's also, I giggle every time because now I can't remember. Is it the shield tower? Is it the unit tower? Oh my gosh, I'm going to lose my geek cred for this. But the government tower in the Doctor Who series now looks very much like the Avengers tower.
Yeah, what? No coincidence there that Disney just happens to own Marvel. So
yeah, it's the unit tower.
It should be it should be that they actually go ahead and make Doctor Who a crossover into the Marvel universe and say it's the former Avengers tower, because you find out that was being sold. Like, that's mentioned in a previous Marvel movie that they sold the Avengers tower.
I would die in a very good way.
I think it's supposed to be part of the Fantastic Four, if I'm being honest, but I still think it would have been funny if that had been sold to the Doctor Who universe.
I'm all for it. I'm all for that crossover. Disney, I'm all for that crossover.
It sounds like you're interested in anticipating this next season, which is good to know, because between the two of us, Ariel is more of the Doctor Who fan than I am. I I have watched a bit, but only like I saw the entire Eccleston and David Tennant runs. And then I started Matt Smith, but I never got all the way through Matt Smith's run. So I am not like the hardcore Doctor Who fan.
Yeah. And I know several of you listeners are too. So I look forward to chatting with you on Discord about it. To be honest.
So next up, we have a trailer for an animated film called Mars Express, which feels like it's pulling together a whole bunch of ideas from other science fiction stories like Isaac Asimov's I, Robot and Blade Runner, particularly.
Minority Report.
Minority Report, another one, yeah. It features a woman who's a detective in the police force. Her partner is an android, and there are some cases in which robots are acting out against humans, which is not something they should be able to do, which again is akin to like Isaac Asimov's laws of robotics. And I watched this trailer, and while I kept thinking, oh, this is reminding me of X, Y, and Z, I still thought that it looks interesting and that this is one I'm actually kind of looking forward to.
Same. I was a little confused at the beginning because the studio making it is G-Kids. I was like, is this a kid's? It is not a kid's film.
No, it's immediately apparent this is not meant for children, but I had the same reaction. I was like, oh, this is going to be a show for children. And then it starts and I'm like, nope, totally wrong about that.
Yeah. Apparently this studio does make, you know, adult, not like adult, but like movies for grownups that are not for kids too. It's just a interesting, confusing name. The art style for the trailer is simplistic in a way that when I started watching the trailer, I didn't think it would work, but I actually really liked by the end.
Same. Yeah. It's in an anime style, but it's in anime style that you might associate with much older anime properties, stuff like, like some of the films that were coming out in the late 70s, early 80s, like that era, as opposed to stuff that you would see today. And I agree. I had the same initial reaction, but by the end I was on board. Yeah. This is one where, again, like, I don't know that they're going to be saying anything new necessarily, but the combination of elements, like the fact that you've got some procedural in there, there's some sort of noir detective work in there, a la Blade Runner. You've got the story again, similar to Blade Runner, where you've got rebelling robots. It's enough components to make me want to check it out.
Yeah, same. Speaking of components, like the sandwich components of a Pop-Tart.
Yeah, I told you we were going to come back to that.
What do you think about the trailer for Unfrosted?
So yeah, Unfrosted. It is Jerry Seinfeld directed it and also acts in it. I think it's his directorial debut.
I believe so.
Yeah, he's debuting in this one. And it looks very funny. Like it's making me think like it's a sillier, more exaggerated story than some of the other like product-based biopic style films we've gotten in the past. Like we got the one that was about mm-hmm. Flamin' Hot Cheetos. I felt like that one was less whimsical. This one, yes. Whimsical is even the wrong word. Less comedic. This one's clearly comedic. It's stocked with comedic actors who are playing various roles from like supporting to like cameo. It looks very silly in a lot of ways, and obviously is taking some serious liberties with the actual history of the Pop-Tart. But yeah, I was entertained by the trailer. I would probably watch this.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to click on this and I'm going to decide not to even add it to our lineup. But it was such a farcical retelling of the Kellogg's history. I'll be interested to know after watching it how much of that stuff actually happened, if maybe not in the same exact way. It just looks hilarious. Afterwards, I had some friends be like, "Man, I wish I could just sit around and record having fun with my friends and then make money off of it and call it my job." I'm like, "Well, you could. You just depend on if people liked it." But I yeah. suspect people will like Unfrosted.
It's not like this is new territory. Adam Sandler has made that his career for almost his entire career. Is get yeah. your friends together, fool some companies into spending millions of dollars on you, and just goof off for like 3 months and then put a movie out at the end of it. Is the movie worth watching? Absolutely not. But you got Pizza Hut to pay for it, so it's okay.
It's that middle part of getting Pizza Hut to pay for it that's the tricky bit.
Yeah. The first thing you need to do is get on SNL and become a breakout star. But it's something that has me interested, largely for the same reason why I liked movies from like the Dodgeball Anchorman era, where it's an ensemble that looks like they're having fun while they're making something, and that pulls through on the screen. So something that almost pulled us in through the screen was that Sony released a short, The Spider Within, a Spider-Verse story. So this is part of like Into the Spider-Verse and everything like that. And it's a 6 minute long animated short. And it's got some heavy stuff in it. So much so that I gave Ariel one trigger warning before she watched it, but it was one trigger warning too few.
Yeah, so it deals with mental struggles in young people, and helps to destigmatize talking about it with someone, because a lot of things that people struggle with, you feel alone, but you aren't alone, and you should talk with somebody about it, whether it's a friend or a family member or a professional. So this is working to destigmatize that, showing that even superheroes deal with that. And yeah, they really, really do. But yes, at one point in this movie, Miles Morales gets sleep paralysis. And I thought they did a really good job of relaying the feeling of being in it and then kind of realizing that you're in it and trying to fight your way out of it, even though I don't necessarily see a big shadowy figure with glowing eyes most of the time. but then it turns into a spider that turns into a bazillion tiny spiders crawling all over him. And that is why I'm afraid of spiders, is because I squished a spider egg nest once and had billions of tiny spiders crawling all over me. It probably wasn't actually billions, but it sure felt like it. And I had the creepy crawlies for days, and I got bit by the mom spider.
I mean, he had one crawl out of his mouth.
Sorry, you had to listen to that noise.
Yeah, you left out the part where the one crawls out of his mouth.
I think my brain blocked that out of my memory for my own health. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. There's also the ones that crawling near his eyeballs and stuff. Yeah. No, it's a visceral moment. Like, as I was watching it, I was like, wow, this is like serious horror level stuff. But again, it comes back around to him, to Miles, reaching out to his dad to talk about some of his struggles, obviously not to talk about him being Spider-Man, because that's still a secret, but a way of him talking about, you know, how he's challenged to live up to the expectations that he's under. Like, it's tough because he obviously can't talk about how he's exceeding expectations in one area of his life, but that's affecting him in other areas. It's something similar that Peter Parker stories have explored in the past as well. Mm-hmm. And also, the release is done in connection with a nonprofit organization called the Kevin Love Fund, which is all about destigmatizing these conversations about mental health, particularly among youth. It's good to see that one, Sony is offering up this incredibly high platform for storytellers to use to get these messages across, and two, that they are partnering with an organization specifically geared toward addressing these issues.
Yeah. Check them out.
It's also a good short.
So, it's really good. It's beautiful. Of course, all this Spider-Verse stuff is. And it's yeah, it's a really good short. I enjoyed it. Minus the spiders.
Yeah. I don't think Becca's going to be able to watch it. I don't think I can show it to her.
No. I like Spider-Man. I can almost handle jumping spiders on a case to case basis if it's just in a picture, because my friend owns like a whole bunch of them. Something that I don't think I can handle anymore on a case to case basis, but I've been proven wrong before and I might be proven wrong again, is that Pirates of the Caribbean are still planning on rebooting. We had talked about this a long time ago, back when Margot Robbie said that she was trying to pitch a Pirates of the Caribbean and it got turned down and canceled. We even did like a little mashup about it. But apparently that's not maybe exactly the case. And also post-strike, everything is still in the works.
Yeah, so this largely comes from movie producer Jerry Bruckheimer, who has said that the current intent is to reboot the series. Essentially, it seems like there's the implication that it would not be practical to continue the series as is. A lot of people have used that to draw the conclusions that it's because of Johnny Depp's problems that he's encountered over the last couple of years, and that it's kind of an attempt to distance from the actor so that they can continue to tell stories and rake in huge amounts of money without having to deal with the PR nightmare of having an actor on your cast who is has got some problematic issues going on in their personal lives. So whether this actually manifests into a real project remains to be seen. But I mean, it shouldn't come as a surprise that there's still a move to try and reboot the series, because Pirates of the Caribbean did rake in boatloads, to use an appropriate term, boatloads of cash for Disney, although it was diminishing returns film to film. So like, the first two did really well, and then after that they did less well. Still great, like still bring in lots of money, but not as much as the earlier entries did.
I think the first two were really fun movies. I thought the third one was passable. But I think the reason that they were so good at the start and that they had diminishing returns is because it was new. It was something in the veins of Lord of the Rings, but fun and piratey, and we hadn't had it before. Rebooting it, I don't think is going to do the same thing.
Well, and it also was kind of a shock, because here was Disney making a film adaptation based off of a ride. And I think the only other time they had done that was Haunted Mansion. So no one had any expectation that Pirates of the Caribbean was even going to be worth watching. And it turned out the first one was a fun, if clunky, adventure film. Yeah. I still maintain the first film's got some real issues with the plotting and everything, partly because they were still writing the screenplay when they started filming it. So they were kind of like, they're kind of like laying the train tracks while the train was barreling down. But I still think out of all the films that I have seen, which granted, I think is only the first three, it's the best of the bunch.
I think I've seen four or five of them. Maybe there's only four or five. I didn't see the last one.
That's the fifth one, I think.
Okay, so I've seen four then.
So you've seen the one with Penelope Cruz, right?
Yes.
But not the one with Javier Bardem.
Not the one with Harvey. Yeah. I've seen like 10 minutes of the one with Javier Bardem. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what 10 minutes that was.
I've only seen the clips that were pretty much used in the trailer, where it's like Javier's gargling black mouthwash while trying to talk. But that's all I remember. Next up, we got a look at some artist renditions of the Isle of Berk land for the upcoming new Universal Studios park. And I was really impressed with the plans. Like, whether or not that's what it looks like when it finally is real is another thing, but the artist renditions, I'm like, man, you're gonna make me want to go to this place, even though you still have a Harry Potter land attached to it.
Yeah, I was saying the same thing. If, for those who don't know, Isle of Berk is How to Train Your Dragon, which is a delightfully fun movie. I've only seen the first one, but it's a lot of fun. The plans look great. It looks like there's going to be a good mix of like immersiveness and theater and food and rides and interact. The whole thing about Epic Universal is that it's interactive, right?
Right.
It's going to use some augmented reality. So I'm really excited to see these attractions as more information comes out about them as they get built. Even though there's a Harry Potter land, because they also have Dark Universe, and they're also going to have the Mario World, which they've got one in Japan.
And they have one in California, too.
Yeah, yeah. I feel the same way. I want to go to there. I don't want to go to the Harry Potter section of it.
Yeah.
But I want to go to the rest of it. I wish there was a way to like buy a 3-quarter pass.
Yeah. Where like, could you please make sure that J.K. Rowling doesn't get any of this money? The Harry Potter lands at the other Universal Studios parks, I think, are probably serving as a large amount of inspiration for Epic Universe, because you had spaces there where if you bought a special wand, an interactive wand, you could go to specific locations within the park and wave the wand around and stuff would happen, right? Like you would essentially get like an effect of some sort. Something would light up. You'd hear a sound cue. You might even get like some animatronic action going on, that sort of thing. And I think that ends up being kind of the starting point for the ideation behind Epic Universe. Not that everything's going to be exactly like that when it comes out, but that I think that was kind of, they were like, well, look at what we've already done. How can we do that, but bigger and throughout all of these different lands in different ways?
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's really exciting. I don't know if you have a favorite out of all the pictures that were uploaded, and we'll have a link in our show notes to this, but for me, my favorite was a Viking boat ride that involves water cannons.
Yes, yes. Universal still holds as my favorite water rides between Universal and Islands of Adventure. They have the best water rides.
Yeah.
Of any theme park I've ever been to. So I'm very excited for this water version of the Men in Black ride, where you shoot targets and each other with water guns.
Well,
I'm also all of their depictions have dragons in the sky. And if there are not dragons flying around the Isle of Berk, I'd be highly disappointed.
Yeah. Maybe they can go to the balloon museum to get some ideas. I was going to say, like, turning from this amazing ideation to a sticky situation, there's a Kickstarter campaign you wanted to talk about, which I am here to tell you has definitely made its goal.
Yes. So the Kickstarter campaign, one of my friends, so I have a D&D group, and our DM of the D&D group, who is amazingly creative, sent our group this link. And I just thought it was too fun to not share, which is Gummy Quest Delicious Fantasy Gummies. They're not gummy bears, because they're shaped like dragons and slimes and
demons and dice.
Demons and and they all have paladins and wizards and all kinds of spice worms and things like that. With fun flavor names. They were looking to raise $3,500, and they're almost at 200,000 right now.
Yeah.
But if you want a pack of 150 gummy bear D&D minis that you can stick on your board and eat later, including like health potions. They also give you like little health potions and dice and things like that. You can join the Kickstarter, because that way you'll be one of the first people to get it. For 150 gummies, it's like $42.
Yeah.
Which is still a lot of money, but it's a lot of gummies.
But it's $18 cheaper than what they're going to sell it for later. Because they said their MSRP is $60 for 150 of these things.
Yeah. What I will say is, at least the pictures they have of it, these are very intricate candies for being squishy candies.
Yeah. I think they look great. I would be tempted to back this if they had plant-based versions, because a lot of gummies, essentially most of them, include gelatin as an ingredient. Gelatin is derived from animal products, which means that my wife and I, we don't eat gelatin-based gummies. We did find a couple of companies that make really good plant-based gummies that we enjoy quite a bit. But my guess is that they went with a mix that is best suited to hold these intricate shapes. And that might not be the best use of the plant-based stuff. Like, I don't know that you could get this intricate with the detail. But while I don't think I'll be ordering any because I don't think I could eat them, they're really, like, the designs are really cool. I mean, I'm going through all of them, and I love their names too. They're all so punny. You've got like the palm eye granite for the pomegranate, which is a beholder.
That's really the best one. There's owlberry, which is also quite good.
Yeah. Well, there's subterranean spice, which is like, it's like a giant, I mean, it's essentially a sandworm from Dune is what it is, but that's not.
And then there's just one called Death.
Yep.
It's just Death.
Yep.
Or Healmanade. Anyhow, we will, like Jonathan said, we'll link to it in our show notes. Our website is up to date and I will get these show notes up this weekend. You know, maybe they'll make enough money that they can also do a plant-based version of this in the future. Really, this, it just hit me at a time because I had just seen D&D had released a video on TikTok of Tristan Falcone talking about how gelatinous cubes get their flavor, which is they start off flavorless and they pick up their flavor from all the things that they encounter. Engulf.
Yeah.
It was very funny.
Oh, wow, so, it's a very, and then this I got is a this link. Very kobold flavored gelatinous cube.
yes. So it hit me just at the right time to amuse me. I hope it amuses you too.
Cool. Well, I think that wraps up this episode. And while it's not as epic as last week's, it definitely ended up being longer than what we thought it was going to be yesterday morning.
Yes. My dear friend, Jonathan.
Yeah.
I gotta ask you.
Sure, go ahead.
How do people reach out and contact us?
So what you're going to have to is you're going to have to, listen, I've been watching a lot of food competition, like food eating challenges on YouTube recently, and that's what inspired me. What you're going to have to do is you're going to have to track down a gelatinous cube. I'm talking a 10 foot by 10 foot by 10 foot cube of gelatinous material. There's going to be stuff floating in it. Not all of it's going to be edible. Like, there's going to be armor and swords and maybe a halfling foot or two in there. You're going to have to eat all of it. I mean, I need to see a clean plate. You are not allowed to get up and leave the table and go to the bathroom. That's a cheater move. We all know you're going to go there so that you can puke it up and come back out and finish off the cube. Nope, you got to finish it in a single setting. The professional food competition rules apply here. I will not give you a time limit because that is a significant amount of food you're eating. But once you finish it, you're going to have a server come over to say that the meal is comped because you finished the whole thing, that you do get either a t-shirt or hat, your choice of I ate the gelatinous cube. Your picture will go up on the wall and then you'll see the manager come over and what do you know? It's me. And then you can ask your question.
Yeah, and if you're not into Survivor-style food challenges, you can reach out to us on social media. Or, you know, if you don't eat animals like Jonathan, you can reach out to us on social media on Facebook and Instagram and Threads and Discord. We're Large Neutron Collider. On Twitter/X, we're LNC_podcast. And you can also email us at largenerdronpod@gmail.com. Our website is www.largenerdroncollider.com. where we have all of our show notes and also an invite to the Discord. I think that about covers it. So until next time, I am Ariel, one of those gubbies better taste like Mountain Dew Kasten.
And I am Jonathan. I am so full, Strickland. The Large Neutron Collider was created by Ariel Kasten and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.